May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Jeff Baines, number 44369, and I represent the respondent cross-applicant appellant, Marilyn Marks. My colleague Robert McGuire is also counsel of record in this case on behalf of Ms. Marks. Your Honors, this case, viewed narrowly, concerns the conduct of the recount of the November 2012 election for House District 39. Viewed more appropriately, however, this case is about something much more important, which is the public's ownership of elections. The district court erred on two critical questions in deciding this case. First, the district court applied the wrong framework for analyzing whether the open meetings law applies to canvas boards in the state of Colorado. Second, the district court erred by finding that the canvas board did not violate the open meetings law. The record overwhelmingly contravenes this erroneous finding. We'll discuss these two questions in turn. Before I do so, I'd like to emphasize the important backdrop against which these questions must be considered. We're talking today about a body that is responsible for certifying an election, for making decisions about which vote should be counted and which vote should not be counted, and for deciding how to make those important decisions. And today we're looking at questions that fundamentally ask whether those decisions should be discussed and made in public or in private. As you consider the legal questions raised by this case, we ask the court to remember that there's likely no process more sacred to the public's trust in the functioning of our government than the process by which officials are elected. And that there is therefore no process for which it is more important to have transparency and accountability, as envisioned by the legislature when it enacted the Open Meetings Law in 1972. The first question I'd like to discuss today concerns the incorrect legal analysis applied by the district court to the question of whether the open meetings law applies to canvas boards. This is a simple question of statutory construction. It's our position that the open meetings law applies to any board of any political subdivision of the state. That position comports with a plain reading of the statute. There were therefore only two questions before the district court. First, is the canvas board a board, as its name suggests? And second, does it operate under a political subdivision of the state of Colorado? We believe the answer to that question is equally clear, given that the canvas board is a Douglas County entity, and Douglas County is undeniably a political subdivision of the state of Colorado. But the district court did not address either of those two questions. Instead, the district court substituted a different analysis. The district court created an analytical framework in which it asked three questions. First, is the entity a board, committee, commission, or authority? Second, does the entity exercise policymaking or rulemaking authority? Third, does the entity exercise a delegated governmental decision-making function? But with all due respect to the district court, this simply is not the test for determining whether a canvas board is subject to the open meetings law. Indeed, the exercise of policymaking, rulemaking, or delegated decision-making functions only becomes relevant if the answer to the district court's first question is no. In other words, the statute is clear as written, but you only need to look at policymaking, rulemaking, or delegated decision-making functions if the entity is not a board, committee, commission, or authority of a political subdivision in the state of Colorado. The test applied by the district court was simply the wrong test, which the district court derived from, respectfully, a misreading of this court's decision in the free speech defense case, which is cited in the briefs. Free speech defense involved an entity called the Citizens Advisory Board for the Office of the District Attorney. A division of this court stated very clearly in that case, and I'm quoting here, "We perceive no ambiguity in the statute. As relevant here, the first part of the definition of local public body includes any advisory body of any political subdivision of the state." Relying on that language alone, it's very easy to imagine that the panel that decided free speech defense would certainly find a canvas board to be subject to the open meetings law. But in contrast to our case, free speech defense involved an entity that did not meet the first part of the definition of local public body. It involved an entity that was indeed a board, but the entity was not an entity of a political subdivision of the state, as we have here. That issue was the crux of that case. As a result, the court's reasoning, this court's reasoning in the free speech defense case simply doesn't apply to our case. And therefore, with all due respect, the district court erred in relying on that reasoning. In summary, regarding the first question before this court, the district court erred by expanding the analysis in this case beyond what was required by the plain language of the statute to include an inquiry into the nature of the function performed by a canvas board. The answers to those questions are simply irrelevant, to whether Colorado County Cannabis Board is subject to the open meetings law. And for those reasons, we ask this court to reverse the district court's holding on that issue. I'd like to turn to the second question that we have before the court today, which is whether the record supports the district court's finding that the Cannabis Board complied with the open meetings law. And this question has several parts that have been addressed in the briefs. Today, I'd like to focus on a single holding by the district court, which I think drives the answers to the various issues addressed in the briefs. The district court appears to have held, and I'm referring to pages 157 and 158 of the transcript of the November 29th hearing in this case, that the recount was comprised of two parts: a private meeting that the Cannabis Board claimed was an executive session, and the rest of the recount, which was not a meeting within the definition of meeting in the open meetings law. Frankly, with all due respect to the district court, this portion of its holding is difficult to understand. But the district court characterized the remainder of the recount, other than the claimed executive session, as the ministerial function of counting ballots, and held that no policymaking or rulemaking function could be exercised during that portion of the recount. For the same reasons that the exercise of policymaking and rulemaking functions is irrelevant to whether an entity is a local public body and subject to the open meetings law, so too is the exercise of those functions irrelevant to whether you have a meeting under the open meetings law. Instead, the relevant question, according to the actual wording of 24.6.402.2b, which the district court failed to ask, is whether the Cannabis Board discussed public business or took formal action. And we submit that there should be no question that the recount of an election involved the discussion of public business, and that the certification of a recount was a formal action. Accordingly, the district court's interpretation of whether the recount was a meeting under the open meetings law simply misunderstands how the open meetings law applies in this case.
Mr. Baines, if the board discussed public business, but in the context of seeking attorney advice, does that make a difference?
In terms of whether it qualifies as a meeting or whether...
No, whether the materials is nevertheless discoverable, is nevertheless obtainable.
Well, Your Honor, I think the statute is very clear with respect to the procedure for obtaining attorney advice in the context of a public meeting. If you properly declare an executive session, you have a public vote, and you get a majority vote to go into executive session, if you specify what you're going to talk about, and in particular, if you're going to get attorney advice, you have to be specific about what attorney advice you're getting, of course, without violating the privilege. The private session has to be recorded surrounding the period where the attorney advice is given. As long as all of that's complied with, then certainly they can discuss attorney advice in private.
Do you understand the county's position to be that this was a complete executive session that was convened for purposes of getting attorney advice, or not?
I believe that is what the county is trying to assert, but there's a fundamental factual problem with that assertion, and that is that this was a 4.5-hour meeting that was convened to receive attorney advice, but the attorney that was providing the advice was absent for half of the meeting. So it's fairly inconceivable to me how you can be receiving attorney advice when your attorney is out of the room and you haven't adjourned your meeting.
Is it conceivable that the attorney says, I need to go research some items, I'll be back in an hour?
It certainly is, but in that case, I respectfully submit that you adjourn the meeting and reconvene.
Is there anything that requires that to be done, to adjourn the meeting, come back into open session, and go back into executive session?
Well there is, because in that case you have a board that's subject to the open meetings law meeting privately, not for the receipt of attorney advice. As long as they stayed in the room with the door closed, that was a private meeting.
Even if they were discussing the attorney's advice, they would have to go back into open session? Wouldn't that violate the attorney-client privilege to have a requirement to do that?
I think that's an interesting question, Your Honor, but I think it's solved by the language of the statute, which says that when the attorney stops providing the advice, you turn the recording back on. Now they could assert.
Where is that in the statute that says once the attorney's out of the room, it's no longer attorney-client privilege? And why would that be the case? If you're discussing what the attorney's advice is, why isn't that attorney-client privileged?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor, maybe I misunderstood. What I was saying is that I believe that that discussion could be attorney-client privileged, but the statute deals with that situation by providing that when the attorney leaves the room, you can continue to hold your private meeting, but you record it, which you wouldn't be doing when the attorney is there because you're receiving legal advice. And then that recording could be subject to review in camera by a court to determine if the discussion was indeed privileged or if it needed to be released.
I think I understand your position, counsel. Thank you.
May I ask a follow-up question? You said previously that it was inconceivable that nothing was discussed when the attorney was out of the room that was not privileged. Can you point to anything in the record that actually demonstrates that that's what occurred?
I'm sorry, I may have, what I was trying to say is something different from what Your Honor has described. What I was trying to say is that if you convene a private meeting and your reason for having a private meeting is to receive attorney advice, it's my position that the attorney needs to be in the meeting for the entirety of the meeting, or you need to turn the recording on so that what is discussed with absent, with the attorney absent, can be reviewed by a court. To kind of follow up on that, the statute also provides that an attorney can make an attestation. Well, the attorney has to do two things. If you're going to turn the recording off during a private meeting of a public body, they can either say for the record that I was giving legal advice during the time I was there, and so that's why we were in a private meeting. That's the purpose of the executive session. Or they can provide a sworn statement saying that what was discussed during the private meeting while I was there was attorney-client privilege. And that's a protection. And that's our society relying on the idea that the attorney is sworn to this statement, and when they were there, they can speak to what happened. And in this case, Mr. Pratt has produced a statement that says that while he was there, they talked about attorney-client privilege information. The problem is that does nothing to speak to what was discussed when he was not there. And what the statute requires is when the attorney is not there, that the recording be turned off, so that there is a record that could be reviewed by a court if the issue arose. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Thank you.
I'd like to go ahead and reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Kelly Dunaway, I'm bar number 31896 on behalf of Douglas County. As counsel for appellant pointed out, there are a number of issues here. First, and from my perspective, most important is whether or not cannabis boards are subject to the open meetings laws. And there's been some discussion about whether the free speech case adequately addresses that particular issue. But I think the real control and authority here is the Castilla County versus Castilla Water Conservancy Board. That's the one that matters, because in that case, it was not disputed that the Castilla County commissioners were a local public body under the statute. They had a breakfast meeting with some federal agents and a mine operator that was polluting the river. It was a breakfast meeting informally called by the mine, and two of the commissioners went, and then, of course, the complaint was that was not properly conducted in compliance with the open meetings laws. What the Supreme Court said in that decision was, yes, this is a local public body, but this meeting was not held to discuss a policy-making function of the county. In every case that considers this issue, policy-making function is the issue. So even if you do have, undisputably, a local public body, if the discussion isn't about business of that local public body, then it's not subject to the open meetings laws. This was reaffirmed recently in the IRAA versus PUC case, where the challenge was to emails that were sent from representatives of the PUC to their legislative representatives taking positions on various legislative issues. IRA wanted those, claimed that under the open meetings laws, they were a public record. PUC said, no, they're not. In the end, again, what the division of this court said was that certainly PUC is, in that case, a state public body, but these communications don't really have much to do with the policy-making function of the Public Utilities Commission, and therefore, these are not subject to the open meetings laws. Now, I would like to push for a ruling that because a meeting that doesn't discuss public business is not subject to open meetings law, then it stands to reason that a body that cannot possibly discuss policy-making functions, it's not in their job description, can never be a local public body for purposes of the open meetings law. And that's what free speech came down with. Free speech came down on that with respect to the it was the Citizen Advisory Committee for the District Attorney, and it is true that the Court of Appeals pointed out that the District Attorney is neither a state public body nor a local public body, but they said even if they were, it doesn't matter because this group was not discussing policy-making functions. Now, if you look at the actual definition in the statute of a local public body, it is a very complicated, convoluted definition. But first, when an appellant says that policy-making function is irrelevant, it's just dead wrong. Supreme Court tells us, and there's really no question that it is relevant. But more importantly, when we get to the basic question and the definition, they want a simplistic definition, the first part. If they are a formally constituted body of a political subdivision of the state, they are a local public body. Now, granted, in the statute, there are several definitions. That's the one they're wanting to go on and say that's all you need to consider. You don't need to go to the policy-making function portion of the definition. Again, that's not what free speech tells us. And I would say it's not correct in this place. But even if we go by that definition, if the reason that a canvas board is to be considered a local public body is because they are a formally constituted body of a political subdivision, then it stands to reason that that body must be formally constituted by that political subdivision and carry on business of that political subdivision. It doesn't say any formally constituted body in a political subdivision. It says of a political subdivision. Has to have a connection. If it was just in the political subdivision of the state, then the Douglas County 4-H Club would be a local public body subject to open meetings laws. They're not because they have nothing to do with the Board of County Commissioners other than some awards that they get out from time to time. What we're talking about here is a canvas board that is created by the statute, that are appointed by the Board of County Commissioners, and are appointed by the committee heads for the Republican Party, for the Democrat Party, in this case, the American Constitution Party. If you have strong enough showing, then you are allowed to have someone on representation on the canvas board. And one representative from the Appointment Recorder's Office. These are statutorily imposed on the county. They have no real communication with the Board of County Commissioners. They follow guidelines promulgated by the Secretary of State. They report their findings to the Secretary of State. The guidelines that are promulgated by the Secretary of State dictate that when the Board of Canvas needs support or direction, they have to direct their questions to the Secretary of State. It simply makes no sense to have a body that Board of County Commissioners has no say-so over. Certainly the clerk and recorder has some communication with them and works in cooperation. But the Board of County Commissioners doesn't hire these people, doesn't appoint these people. They don't train these people. They don't supervise these people. And if what we have is a law that says that agencies or groups or bodies or committees that have nothing to do with the county are suddenly the county's responsibility, financial responsibility and otherwise, then we're going to have 64 counties with dozens of small committees. In Douglas County, for example, there's the Public Safety Advisory Committee, a bunch of citizens that get together, and if there's been a bunch of, gosh, most recently, doggy door break-ins in the neighborhood, they get together and send notes to the sheriff saying, hey, we want you to look at this. Now, they're in Douglas County. Are they formally constituted? I don't know. There's ways that we can argue yes and no on that, but we have to have some bright line, or we're going to have Board of County Commissioners on the line for people they've never even heard of.
Now, excuse me, counsel, I understand that you, for clarification, for clarity purposes, you would like to have a ruling from this court on the issue of whether this canvassing board was a local public body subject to the open meetings law. However, do we even need to decide that if we were to agree with the trial court that the records that were withheld are attorney-client privileged and can't be turned over?
And I would, thank you, and yes, that would not be as much as I would like to accomplish with this case, if that makes sense. And I think that is the case. In this case, there was a failure of evidence. There was no canvas board members called as witnesses. Instead, they simply said the presumption should be on us, the burden should be on us to prove that these conversations did not take place. And what the judge found was there was scant evidence, this is what's in his transcript, there was scant evidence of any conversations that weren't attorney-client privilege. In fact, no evidence of that. And what he found was that even the list of 10 items which they submitted to the court that they believe to be decisions made by the canvas board in these secret meetings, which were really just a recess, none of those are Douglas County policy decisions. In fact, they're not really even canvas board policy decisions. They're administrative decisions. They're decisions, they assume, for example, that there was a decision made not to respond to the complaints that were being sent to them by Ms. Marks. There's no evidence of that. That's an assumption. And on the stand, she admitted she had no personal knowledge, but she assumed this decision must have been made because nobody responded to the complaints. Judge King said, there's no evidence. And even if there was, deciding not to respond to a complaint that Ms. Marks had sent back to them is not a policy-making decision, and therefore it's not a meeting within the meaning of the open meetings laws. So with respect to your question more directly, yes, I think we have no choice but to find that there's no evidence that there was anything that went on in this meeting that was not attorney-client privilege, and therefore, case is over. But this decision will affect 64 counties, and there's a lot of counties watching to see what happens, which is why I'm saying that to the extent that an appellant can get up and make the argument that the free speech case isn't clear, doesn't make this point clear, can get up and say public policy is irrelevant, you don't need a public policy making function. To the extent that ambiguity exists, we need clear precedent on the record.
That's understood, but there's tons of precedential law that indicates that this court should not decide issues that do not, that are not necessary to the decision of a particular appeal. So just pointing that out.
Yes, thank you. And I guess all I can say that it is necessary is that a decision that the open meetings laws do not apply to canvas boards would obviate a lot of further analysis on other matters, which kind of goes back to the other issue that I was going to discuss, because actually there's several other, that Judge King did not decide with respect to whether or not this was a local public body or a state public body. That's another issue that again would be obviated if we just determined that a canvas board is not subject to the open meetings laws, because they never can make a policy-making decision for the county. Because otherwise, it's a question of whether or not the canvas board is a board of the state, to whom they reply, to whom, whose direction they follow, to whom they're directed to go to for support, or the county, where they sit, where they work with the clerk in the quarter, and where by statute they receive, actually, I hear most of them actually receive it, but they're entitled to a $15 a day fee for their services, which is again imposed by statute. But again, that $15 that the county pays, that's no more an indication that they're a county public body than jury fees that a jury gets indicate that a jury is a state public body. They're simply fees that must be paid. With respect to the private meetings that were alleged to have occurred, again, there is no evidence that there was anything outside of the attorney-client relationship. In fact, the evidence from Mr. Pratt's testimony at the hearing was simply that at times he would get called away to take care of other matters, and when he did, he would instruct them, don't talk about anything substantive, I'll be back soon, and he would go. People would send emails, they would do lunch, they would make phone calls, maybe they talk about sports. who knows, and if it were true, certainly I'm not aware, nobody's aware, if it were true that there were some substantive discussions going on in that executive session meeting, then it was the appellant's burden to call the Canvas Board members and get them to testify about what those may have been. That did not happen. That was a proof on that part. But again, it goes back to whether or not open meetings laws should even apply. You refer to this private meeting, but this should be actually subject to open meetings laws the whole time. Well, two things on that. The record reflects that, number one, it was never set up to be open meeting the whole time long. It was 2 days of this work, counting, stuffing ballots into these machines and making sure to recount it again. That was not and cannot be open meeting, because what was announced, again, on the record, what Mr. Pratt testified to, was that at the end of the recount, they would have a meeting that they would conduct in compliance with open meetings laws to announce the findings of the Canvas Board. That was the announcement. As things went on, people got nervous because of all these objections, these questions about, actually, am I screwing up? Am I going to be liable? That's when Pratt said, you know what, maybe we'll have an executive session. But my point is, none of that should have happened, because the whole recount process is incompatible and inconsistent with open meetings laws.
Mr. Donnelly, can I ask you a question? Sorry. Is it conceivable that the Canvas Board could be making policy decisions based upon ballots that may have been spoiled somehow, that they wouldn't count that? I mean, isn't that a policy-making decision?
Two things on that. Number one, it wouldn't be a policy-making decision of the Board of County Commissioners. It would be their own policy, and I don't know who represents them, not me. With respect to whether or not they can make those decisions, no. The Goff decision tells us that those decisions are exclusively within the province of the election judges. Your canvas doesn't make determinations. The guy you saw during the Florida recounts looking at the butterfly ballots, that's not the Canvas Board, that's the election judges. The Canvas Board doesn't do any of that. And that's in the Secretary of State regulations that say they don't determine voter intent. That's the job of the election judges that are there. And in fact, that's what the court in the Goff decision said also. That's always been in the province. And in fact, if you go back even further to the Griffiths case, they point that out, that that's the province of the judges. So I would say that no, they don't make policy for the Canvas Board, and two, they certainly don't make policy for the political subdivision, Douglas County Board of County Commissioners, with to whom they're attempting to be assigned in this case. Lastly, if I can just finish up, Secretary of State Rules 8.3, if you're an attorney for a candidate, you can't attend a recount or a Canvas Board. One watcher under 8.6.3, only one per candidate can go. 8.8, the watchers that go, they're not allowed to interfere. All of the objections couldn't go. Inconsistent with the purposes of open meeting laws, when the rules specifically say, you can't go, only one of you can go. I see my time is up. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
My time is fairly limited, so I'm going to speak fairly quickly. The first thing I'd like to address is the Castilla case and the Colorado PUC case. I'll concede that there is a definite paucity of authority interpreting the open meetings law. But frankly, that shouldn't lead this court to embrace precedent that is frankly irrelevant to the issues that are before the court. Castilla involved a situation where there was no connection between the meeting and the policy-making process that was meant to exist for the board. That's simply not the case here. The Canvas Board was meeting to conduct the recount, which is directly related to the policy-making function, which I'll come on to in a minute. The Colorado PUC case, that involved emails among members of the Canvas Board. And the emails, but we didn't relate to the policy-making function. That's not the situation we have here. We're not arguing about the Canvas Board sending emails to each other about what they're going to have for lunch. We're talking about the conduct of a recount and whether it should be done in public. So those cases, although there aren't a whole lot of open meetings law cases, those cases just have no bearing on the issues before this court. If the court wants to look extraneously beyond the statutory interpretation to figure out if the open meetings law applies to cannabis boards. I would suggest that the court look at what other states do. In the research that I've done, I found no state that didn't treat cannabis boards as subject to their open meetings law, except for Iowa, which, in the Attorney General's opinion in the state of Iowa, pointed out that other laws require that recounts and cannabis board activities be conducted in public. So although the open meetings law didn't specifically apply, you get to the same place because the canvas of a recount has to be done in that state. And there are several other states that specifically do say that the open meetings law applies to canvas courts. With respect to your honor's question about the issue of if you decide that the notes are privileged, I would submit that there were plenty of other violations that took place at this meeting. In addition to the four and a half hour private meeting that took place, there were a whole series of little huddles where members of the cannabis board got together out of earshot of the public and discussed who knows what. They may have been discussing, again, what to have for lunch, but we don't know because they were meeting in private outside of the public's hearing. And that violates the very purpose of the open meetings law. This stuff is supposed to be done in public so that the public can see what's going on, can understand the decisions that are being made, many of which we would submit as argument or briefs are substantive, are discretionary, as the court recognized in Griffin, the Supreme Court recognized in Griffin. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course.